Hong Kong's importance to China has diminished since 1997, but it's still very important.
China says it plans to make one of its cities a better place than Hong Kong. This is Thursday, August 21st, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Join us on VOA Asia Facebook. Also ahead, another round of talks between the U.S. and North Korea is missing at least one major element. Everyday life is far from back to normal in Kashmir, and a terrific tale about tigers in India. All on today's VOA Asia. Protesters in Hong Kong brought their message to commuters Wednesday on the one-month anniversary of a subway station attack by suspected gang members. Michael Sullivan reports that protesters want an independent investigation into that violent incident.
An unprovoked attack that left at least 45 injured, captured in a Facebook live stream. White-shirted men, thought to be triad gang members sympathetic to Beijing, attacked activists, travelers, and journalists. Protesters urged commuters, don't forget.
So a month ago in Yunnan Station, a group of triads of over 100 rushed into the station, attacking passengers and staff. And I think this shouldn't happen in a society like Hong Kong.
Hong Kong's busy subway system has returned to normal, but 1 month after the attack, police have filed no charges.
That is 1 month later and no one was prosecuted. They just arrested some of people, but not prosecuted yet. So we are remind the Hong Kong people, don't let them forget this thing.
Why, protesters ask, were police so slow to respond to the mass attack? More station protests are planned for Friday. 1 month later, a demand for answers. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News, Hong Kong.
The Chinese government has unveiled plans to make their mega city of Shenzhen into what they say will be a better place than Hong Kong. What do American businesses who have offices and headquarters in Hong Kong have to say about that? To get an answer, I spoke with Doug Barry, Director of Communications for the U.S.-China Business Council.
I would think that it's going to be a tough sell, both for the people in Hong Kong and for the many foreign companies that have their headquarters there who like it fine and aren't going to be lured so easily across the border. Why should they go? In Hong Kong, they've got, you know, this incredible ecosystem of expertise from many parts of the world. It's still a very important financial center, one of the most important financial centers in the entire world, and it's difficult to break that apart and move it across the border, even though Shenzhen is just, you know, literally some 100 yards away from Hong Kong territory.
Could this be construed as a punishment for Hong Kong in reaction to the protests that have been going on?
It's hard to say. It could be a warning to Hong Kong that if they don't fall into line, you know, there are other places where business can be conducted. But I think it would be, you know, not in the best interests of China or, for that matter, the world to have that happen. I mean, certainly a lot of business that used to be conducted in Hong Kong on behalf of the mainland Chinese has immigrated across the border and is now being done in Shanghai and other very large and sophisticated cities on the east coast of China. So Hong Kong's importance to China has diminished since 1997, but it's still very important. There's no place in China right now like Hong Kong. And there you can find this finance expertise that perhaps exists nowhere else in the concentrated form that it does there. You've got sophisticated bond traders. You've got people who are interested in and can sell Chinese private sector corporate junk bonds. You've got people who can do currency swaps and exotic financial products of all kinds. You have a stock market where Chinese firms in the private sector want to be listed in order to raise capital. That cannot easily be packed up in boxes and sent across to Shenzhen, no matter how sophisticated and flashy they're going to make it. But, you know, there are certain things that make Hong Kong Hong Kong. And one of them is the freedom of expression, the freedom of speech, the freedom of information. Another is their court system, which is based on, Western rule of law, not Chinese. So you can't pack that in a box and ship that across. So what's interesting to speculate is if the Chinese authorities are able at some point in the future to lure these things across the border in an effort to diminish Hong Kong and to control it more, they may find that it won't work unless they also import the very things that make Hong Kong special, and that is its freedoms and its rule of law.
Does that encompass what your organization might think about this, the U.S.-China Business Association, as far as moving, if they needed to, from Hong Kong to Shenzhen?
Well, that would be up to the individual members, and those of our members that have their Pacific Asia headquarters in Hong Kong, I think they are interested in staying there. They don't want to go anyplace else. It will be up to them, of course, to make those decisions if there is a time when they think moving may be necessary. But they may very well move out of the area entirely, and they could go to Singapore or Bangkok or Tokyo or some other place, and they would prefer not to. I know that. They want to stay because they have an investment there. Hong Kong works very well for them. It's got a great airport. It has a great seaport. And, of course, it has all of this ecosystem that I mentioned, with people from all over the world, expertise unrivaled anywhere else. That's where they want to be. That's where they want to stay. They want to make Hong Kong work, and they hope that it can.
Doug Barry is the Director of Communications for the U.S.-China Business Council. These are among the top Asia stories you'll find right now at voanews.com. Two U.S. service members were killed in action Wednesday in Afghanistan, according to the U.S. military, as talks between the U.S. and the Taliban are set to resume in Qatar. Beijing appealed to Washington Wednesday to meet China halfway on a new trade deal to end the tit-for-tat tariff war, the two biggest economies. China confirmed on Wednesday that a local employee at Britain's Hong Kong consulate has been held under a 15-day administrative detention because of allegations of violating local laws. And U.S. President Trump Wednesday said he was the chosen one to address trade imbalances with China. This is VOA Asia. The latest round of U.S.-South Korean military exercises have finished. The top U.S. envoy for North Korea is in Seoul. Everything seems to be in place for the resumption of long-delayed working-level nuclear talks with North Korea. Everything, that is, except for North Korea, as VOA's William Gallo reports from Seoul.
North Korean leader Kim Jong-un may have promised to resume talks when the U.S.-South Korean military drills ended. They did end Tuesday. A day later, Steve Biegun, the top U.S. envoy for North Korea, confirmed during a visit to Seoul he hadn't heard from the North.
Regarding the restart of those negotiations, we are prepared to engage as soon as we hear from our counterparts in North Korea.
Instead, North Korean state media blasted the U.S. for holding the drills at all and hinted the North could soon return to larger provocations. The latest U.S.-South Korean exercises were computer-based, meaning there were no bombs dropped on dummy targets or overt displays of military strength. But North Korea has continued to complain about the scaled-back drills, saying it sees them as preparation to invade. William Gallo, VOA News, Seoul.
Happening now in Asia, separatist leaders in Indian Kashmir have urged people to defy a ban and join a mass march after Friday prayers this week, the first such call since the federal government revoked the region's autonomy, stirring anger in the region and beyond. Make sure you stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Thank you for being with us. India has slightly eased its communications blockade in Kashmir, but conditions in the contested region are still not normal. About 2 weeks after the Indian government announced it was revoking Kashmir's autonomy, while some landlines have been reconnected, mobile and internet access are reportedly still cut off, a situation that has hurt local businesses, including tourism. VOA's Arash Arabasadi has more.
For more than 50 years, Abdul Razak showed tourists the sights from his wooden boat called a Shikara. But now, there's not much to show.
We have been living in curfew for over 10 to 12 days now. Everything is shut under the curfew. Movement, communications, that is how they have kept it.
People in Srinagar say tourism is dead in what typically is a summer vacation hotspot. They blame the recent spike in tensions created by India's clampdown of Kashmir after the government stripped the rest of the region of its autonomy.
People usually prefer to visit areas where there is peace and tranquility. Why would they take so much risk, spend so much money to come here and then face trouble?
Parts of this area sit on Dal Lake, where houseboats and water tours are major economic draws to this tourist destination that welcomes hundreds of thousands of visitors each year.
We don't have any business right now. From 5th of August, everything is closed here. And what is the problem?
Despite sinking businesses, Kashmiris say some things are more important than money.
We are in all sorts of problems, but we are not bothered. Even if we die, even if our children die.
We don't need the business here. What is our right? We need that. We don't need your phone lines, mobile connection, internet, nothing we need it. We need our rights. We are Kashmiri and we shall have identified we are Kashmiri.
Kashmir sits in the Himalayas and borders India, China, and Pakistan. Since early August, India has imposed restrictions on movement and communication, saying they are necessary to prevent violence. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News, Washington.
Coming your way, tigers and more tigers in India. This is VOA Asia.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
This news from VOA Asia. Amazon Wednesday launched its biggest campus in the world in the southern Indian city of Hyderabad, underscoring its expansion plans in the country that has been one of its fastest-growing overseas markets. The move comes months after the Seattle-based company scrapped plans to build a major outpost in New York, then picked Arlington, Virginia, a Washington suburb, as the site for its upcoming second headquarters. VOA Asia continues. India's tiger population has increased by more than 30% in the past 4 years, according to the latest tiger census that was recently released. The country counted 2,967 tigers last year, up from 2,226 4 years ago. India has one of the world's largest conservation programs to protect the big cats, but shrinking habitats and poaching have posed a challenge. Our VOA colleague, Lori London, spoke with Dr. John Goodrich, chief scientist and tiger program director with the group Panthera.
The news from India is fantastic. They've estimated about 3,000 tigers in India, and India is truly the leader in tiger conservation of all the tiger range states. And one of the reasons things are going so well there is they have a very long history of conservation. They started Project Tiger in the 1970s. They now have over 50 protected areas called tiger reserves that are protected specifically for tigers. Those reserves are patrolled. They have a very active and very successful tourism program, and they're actively dealing with human-tiger conflicts, you know, when tigers wander out of these protected areas and attack livestock or sometimes even people. So with all these things combined, they're doing a really fantastic job.
Do you think this could be a trend for the rest of the world, or are we still seeing the opposite in other places, the few places that there are tigers?
Well, I hope it could be a trend for the rest of the world. It certainly is a trend for South Asia. So in India, Nepal, and Bhutan, tigers are doing really well. In stark contrast, in Southeast Asia, in Thailand, Malaysia, and Indonesia, tigers are really struggling, and Malaysia is probably in the most desperate shape right now, and Thailand and Indonesia doing a little bit better. But in those countries, poaching is so bad, and it's putting tremendous pressure on the tiger populations. And we've lost tigers from Laos, from Vietnam, and from Cambodia since the turn of the century.
Meaning gone?
Gone, extirpated, poached out.
How dire is it in the other countries that you named that were struggling?
Recently, WWF has stated that they expect if we don't do something, tigers may be extirpated from Malaysia within the next 3 years. I'd be a little bit more optimistic than that, but still it's a dire situation. In general, there are, by some estimates, about 1 million square kilometers of vacant tiger habitat out there. Much of it is in Southeast Asia, and it's vacant because tigers have been poached out.
Why are they poaching them? For what?
Primarily for the traditional Asian medicine market, with primary countries that are buying the products being China and Vietnam.
Are they taking any approaches to try to reverse that, like the efforts that have been done, say, for the use of ivory?
Absolutely. There are efforts at every end of the spectrum. You know, training and try to increase protection on the ground in protected areas through ranger patrols, all the way up to efforts to stop wildlife trade at the international level, and even efforts to influence demand in user countries. Traditional Chinese medicine, so tiger parts are being consumed for medicinal purposes.
What are the numbers like as far as how many tigers there are, the estimates of the numbers that have been lost?
Well, we don't have good numbers for number of tigers poached per year because poaching is such an illicit activity and most of it goes under the radar. But right now we estimate there are about 4,000 tigers left in the wild. That number will probably increase a little bit with India's recent estimate, but for all intents and purposes, let's say 4,000. 100 years ago, we estimate there was 100,000 tigers out there. So that's the kind of decline we're looking at.
Has it amplified in recent years, or has it just been a steady decline?
No, it's definitely amplified in recent years with improving economic conditions in Asia. It creates more of a demand. There are more people that are able to afford tiger parts.
Why is it important that we do everything we can to protect the species?
You know, I get asked that question a lot, and I have a two-part answer. And the first part is that tigers are the biggest cat in the world. They're one of the most magnificent animals on our planet. Everybody loves tigers. Everybody knows what a tiger is. Even people that live near tigers revere them. They are cultural and religious icons throughout Asia. They're the symbols of a number of governments in Asia. You know, with such an important animal, if we can't protect them, what can we protect? And we have to ask questions about our own viability on this planet. From a more practical standpoint, it's important to conserve tigers because they're a species at the top of the food chain. We can think of them as an umbrella species because they require a lot of area. So if we're protecting tigers, we're probably protecting most of the other species in that ecosystem. And we can think of them as a keystone species at the top of the food chain, where if we remove them, there will be sort of a cascade effect through the wildlife community in that ecosystem. Losing a species, especially one as iconic as tigers, is tragic.
Are you hopeful?
I am hopeful. You know, the news coming out of India, the recent news, we're seeing that kind of news from some other countries, especially Nepal, Bhutan. Tigers are doing okay in Russia. And the thing that perhaps makes me the most hopeful is that 1 million square kilometers of vacant habitat out there. There's a lot of space left for tigers. All we need to do is stop the poaching. You know, conceptually, it's a simple recipe for tigers. We need to leave them alone. We need to stop killing them, and they will flourish.
Dr. John Goodrich, the chief scientist and tiger program director with the group Panthera, speaking with VOA's Lori London. This news break from VOA Asia, China Wednesday blasted a huge planned U.S. arms shipment to self-ruled Taiwan and threatened to sanction firms involved in the sale of F-16 fighter jets. The U.S. State Department approved the transfer of 66 of the planes to Taiwan in an $8 billion deal. You're listening to VOA Asia. In Australia, Cardinal George Pell, a former advisor to Pope Francis, has lost his appeal against his convictions for sexually abusing two choir boys in the late 1990s when he was Archbishop of Melbourne. His appeal was rejected by judges at the Victorian Court of Appeals in a 2-1 majority decision. Phil Mercer reports from Melbourne.
Once part of the Pope's inner circle, George Pell arrived to hear his fate in the back of a prison van and wearing a clerical collar. He was found guilty last December of a brazen and forcible sexual attack on two choir boys in Melbourne in the late 1990s. In March, he was jailed for 6 years. His lawyers said the case against him was flawed because the jury relied on the uncorroborated evidence of the surviving boy. But the Victorian Court of Appeal disagreed. Chief Justice Anne Ferguson said the victim was reliable.
Justice Maxwell and I accepted the prosecution's submission that the complainant was a very compelling witness, was clearly not a liar, was not a fantasist, and was a witness of truth.
Outside the court, Chrissy Foster, who campaigns for victims of clerical abuse, said she welcomed the ruling.
Just a wonderful, wonderful day for survivors, for victims. I think it sends a message that justice will be served no matter how high you are or how old you are or, you know, what your job is. This is a crime. It's against children, that innocence just taken and destroyed.
George Pell is the most senior Catholic figure worldwide to be guilty of child sexual abuse. But this case might not be over. His legal team is considering challenging his convictions in Australia's High Court. The 78-year-old Pell is now back in prison in disgrace for crimes he committed more than 20 years ago when he was Archbishop of Melbourne. He'll have to serve more than 3 years behind bars before he's eligible for parole. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Melbourne.
The focus on curing polio is now largely on two countries, Pakistan and Afghanistan, yet there are reports that the eradication effort is stumbling. VOA's Carol Pearson has more.
Administering the polio vaccine is a simple procedure. But in parts of the world, vaccinators risk their lives to protect children from lifelong paralysis. Earlier this year, vaccination stopped during a tribal protest in Pakistan. Polio workers were attacked, harassed, and killed after anti-vaccine rumors spread on social media. And as a result, the number of polio cases increased. Yet despite the dangers, many workers persist in their efforts to end polio. It mostly affects children 5 and under, and since 1988, when the global effort to eradicate polio started, the number of cases has declined by 99.9%.
2018, only two countries, Pakistan and Afghanistan, reported cases of the wild polio virus.
In Pakistan and Afghanistan, clean water is hard to come by, making it harder to eradicate the virus. It spreads through tainted water and because of poor hygiene.
The environmental samples are telling us that there is a polio virus around. That's a danger sign. That is a red light. And it can only be circumvented when we are giving polio drops to everybody around.
To prevent children from getting polio, they need to be vaccinated and revaccinated, especially where there's poor sanitation.
In those environments with frequent infections, about 15 time doses is what is considered adequate.
One of the problems in Pakistan and Afghanistan is getting to the children. Many families migrate back and forth between the countries, making it hard to vaccinate every single child.
The virus views it as one country, and both countries need to work together, and they're increasingly doing that and sharing data and coordinating dates for vaccination campaigns and sharing surveillance data, and all of that is having an impact.
The goal is to end transmission of the wild polio virus. There's no set end date, but getting to the end is essential.
Unless you get to zero cases, because it's such a such a contagious disease and an epidemic-prone disease, we run the risk that it will spread again globally.
Success is by no means assured, but the Global Polio Eradication Initiative intends to continue its campaign until no child ever again gets polio. Carol Pearson, VOA News, Washington.
Thanks for being with us on VOA Asia. My name's Ira Melman in Washington, D.C. Enjoy the day ahead.